Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we have what I believe is now the third in a series of interviews that we're going to do on the subject of electromagnetic health. And that has to do with the threats to our biology and our health and wellness of pervasive electromagnetic waves that now permeate our environment. In the past, we've talked to a couple of illustrious guests. We've talked to Dr. Martin Blank, who's a PhD researcher, and we've talked to Lawrence Gust. And today we're going to talk to Camilla Reese. Camilla is an activist. She's the founder of electromagnetichealth.org. It's a leading U.S. education and advocacy organization focused on the health and environmental effects of electromagnetic fields. And she has co-authored Public Health SOS, The Shadow Side of the Wireless Revolution, together with Magda Havas, PhD. And she also participated in the landmark report, Cell Phones and Brain Tumors, 15 Reasons for Concern. She co-founded the International EMF Alliance in Oslo, Norway, and she's organized a series of conferences internationally on the potential hazards associated with electromagnetic waves. She has her own radio program at KGNU in Boulder, Colorado, also broadcasting to Denver. And she covers a variety of health, environmental, and sustainability topics. She is big in what is called the Bao Biology Movement, which is a movement that tries to build sustainable and healthy homes and workplaces. And she is a well-known environmental advocate. So what I see here, you got a BA from Barnard College. Gee, I went across the street. I went to Columbia College.
I won't put you
on the spot and ask you when you graduated. I won't ask you when you graduated. No. Although it worked out well for our previous guest because he graduated 20 years after I did. Okay, so welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. And I see also that we want to get the word out about this. There's an extraordinary event coming up in New York in which you are spearheading and you're going to be participating. And tell us about that first off.
Yes, this will be an event at the New York Open Center November 15th, and it's on the subject of how we can protect ourselves and our children from electromagnetic fields. And it's a multidisciplinary look. We have experts in, you know, there's the science, experts in the clinical issues, and the perhaps the top remediator in the country, Larry Gust, who's president of the board of the International Institute for Biobiology and Ecology. So we've got a lot of things covered, plus myself, an activist, and I'll be covering a lot of the science also and what people can do. So this is the first public program in New York of its kind.
And by the way, Stephen Sinatra, who's a frequent guest here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, will also be there. Am I correct?
Yes, he will be representing the clinical side of things, and he's an especially valuable asset in this field because while he's a cardiologist, he's also very sensitive to the fact that we are electrical beings and that we need to start thinking of ourselves as electrical beings and doing things that can optimize our potential, understanding that things can interfere with those, you know, the electrical functioning of our body and create illness. And so he's a co-author of Earthing, with Clint Ober, Earthing, perhaps the most important health discovery ever, the book that's been translated into, I think, 16 languages now. And it's a very important new understanding of the importance of grounding ourselves to the earth that takes the charge off of, does two things. It takes the charge off of our bodies, which isn't new. Everybody knows that. You know, in electronics manufacturing, people wear grounded shoes and they have grounded flooring and that sort of thing. But what Ober and Sinatra wrote about in the book Earthing is this other piece of understanding, which is that there's another benefit that we get besides the discharge effect. There's the benefit of the equalization of the energy potential between the earth and our bodies. And what that does is it creates a stability for all of our, all the systems in our body optimizing functioning, whether it's immune system, cardiovascular system, nervous system, respiratory system. It seems to be having a profoundly important effects for people. And so Dr. Sinatra will also be going over that as one of many strategies that one can use in today's electromagnetic environment that was very hard to escape.
And I vouch for the fact that I just had fascinating discussions with both Larry Gust and the other speaker, Martin Blank, PhD. If you go back to the archives of drhoffman.com/podcasts, you can find those excellent discussions. These guys really know their stuff, and they're some of the true pioneers in EMF research. So first of all, you know, let me just say this outright, is that this is sort of a woo-woo area of medicine. You know, we talk here about diet, we talk about vitamins, supplements, herbs, yoga, meditation, acupuncture. But for some people, this sounds a little far out. The possibility that we may be affected by electromagnetic waves sounds a little bit like the people who think that sinister messages are being broadcast via their TV sets or they're hearing voices.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely not in that category. And one of the reasons that people have a hard time understanding this is because they're not visible. You can't see them. So if you're looking out the window and you think you just see nothing, but in, you know, the trees and the buildings, you don't see the vibrations, the electrical packages of energy that are there. And so if they were visible, if there was a way to make the invisible visible, people would be horrified by what they would see. And people have simulated this with computer programs, and also so you can listen to the sound of these frequencies, and that's quite jarring when you hear what it really would sound like if these waves were sounds. And there have been some three-dimensional graphics done by some people at Arizona State that have taken like Salt Lake City and shown you, based on what they know, what they know is transmitting where, they can do a 3D picture of the density of this radiation. And it really is quite eye-opening because people don't understand it's there. And so it's easy to discount the importance of it if you can't see it. But there's no question that the science is in, that we have enough science at this point for the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC, to about 2 years ago designate radio frequency radiation of all forms, you know, in all devices, as a class 2B possible carcinogen. And so as on the heels of that, many countries around the world are starting to take a stand on it. Like Belgium just banned cell phones the other day for children. And
Wait a minute, say that they banned cell phones for children?
That's right.
The country of Belgium, which is a considerable country, they actually have said that children cannot possess or use
cell
phones?
Well, they're not allowing them to be, the children's cell phones to be sold to children. They're not allowed to manufacture and sell what are the little children's type of cell phones, you know, and they're also not allowed to advertise to children. And so that was quite an important step. And an important environmental agency in France the other day has also taken a strong stand on this. We've seen the country of Chile has by overwhelming vote in their Congress called for valuation of all the cell towers and to take them down when if they're too densely situated, and for property owners to be compensated, and they basically given the right to turn down new cell towers to the people, and that's a first. The people actually will be able to approve or not approve applications coming up. So there's a region in India called Rajasthan. It's the biggest region by size on the northwest side.
And by the way, the cell phone revolution in the third world is profound because they've actually bypassed the whole level of Thomas Edison style electricity and gone into the electronic era full-fledged because you know, that now virtually everyone has a cell phone, even if they don't have direct electricity coming to their homes.
And it's going to be especially hard for all situations, all types of economies. It's going to be especially hard to transform the communications systems that are not harmful to human health. In Rajasthan, as I was saying, which is a lot of it is underdeveloped, they, about a year or so ago, they completely banned cell towers anywhere near schools, health facilities, retirement living facilities, and they had 2 weeks to turn them off. And they turned off hundreds of them at that deadline, and then the industry sued and, you know, tried to make a case for why this wasn't fair. And the Supreme Court ruled that they must be all turned off in anywhere near schools, healthcare facilities, et cetera, on health grounds. And so we're really seeing things are happening in other countries, but people in the United States aren't as aware of the problem. I don't know really why that is. Maybe we're all too busy to be paying attention, or maybe that, you know, it's that the fact that our governments have not really taken a strong stand because they're heavily lobbied by the telecom industry. And, you know, there have been some meetings in Congress on this and briefings and meetings, and nothing has ever happened as a result. So we need boots on the ground in Washington, and that's going to be our next focus, because we can educate the public and doctors and get everybody knowledgeable, but if we don't start to see some changes in Washington, nothing will happen. So we will still be at risk.
Well, why is it that many studies that have been done with conflicting results, so some studies showing cell phone harms and harms from power lines, and yet other studies completely exonerate the electronics and communication industry from any responsibility to institute controls? Studies saying, oh, the cell phones are perfectly safe, no problem.
I know, it's rather annoying to see this kind of propaganda spread across the world on the front page of newspapers. And when I say propaganda, because when you actually look at the studies that they roll out to try to make that claim, for example, there's one that's a famous Danish study. It's been rolled out 4 times, you know, with updates. And this study really is considered to be fraudulent in its design. And it was comparing people who it excluded business users of cell phones. And this is in the early 90s when really most people were business users who were using the cell phones then. So it excluded them and compared, it was really comparing users with users. And so you wouldn't expect to see much of a differential. And so they manipulate the science. Sometimes you'll see abstracts that don't match the body of the science. The Interphone study was one of those studies where all around the world the headlines were no risk found from this 13-country study. But what you didn't realize from the headline is that there was a very significant. And it was only in the people who had were heavy cell phone users and had used the cell phone for a long period of time, 10 years. Well, you know, so that to me is the news that people ought to hear, because by now a lot of people have been using the cell phone for 10 years and what was a heavy user then might be a light user today, you know. So there's manipulation of science going on. I don't know if you saw the recent Bill Moyer show on the lead industry. And they recounted the story of the suppression of the science, and we're seeing
same thing with the tobacco
industry, of course. Very same thing here in this.
The same thing.
Very, very same thing.
Yeah. But do you feel that? This begs the question. Some of these studies have an inordinate influence from the communications industry, which is obviously we're talking a multi-billion-dollar, if not trillion-dollar industry worldwide. They wield a lot of power and influence.
Yeah, and they must be having influence in terms of our government's responsiveness to this issue. We know that they're having influence in terms of impact on institutions like universities and cancer institutes and. There's been science suppressed and not published, and fear tactics used, people's houses, robbed, and it's been not a pretty picture. There's right now a scientist in a major cancer institute in America who is they're trying to push out because he did a very important study showing the impact of the hot spots in the brain. And it was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. And it didn't make this cancer institute happy. And they are on record as saying that they don't have an interest in cell phones and brain tumors. So it turns out that the chairman of this institute was once on the board of one of the major cell phone companies for a long period of time. So, how these strings are being pulled behind the scenes, we don't know. But it's pretty obvious that there's a lot of effort to suppress the science. There's a scientist in Finland, Darius Lozinski, who recently, he's being pushed out, a professor, full professor, and he's being pushed out, and he didn't succumb to the pressure from his bosses to say more favorable things and or not say the negative things, the truth about what we know to be the biological effects. So it's,
well, this could actually become a national security issue in Finland because of the prevalence of Nokia, which is virtually responsible for half the economy of that country. He could be actually called up on charges of treason.
Speaking of Nokia, I'd love to find a way to let people know about the tattoo. They have filed a patent for a tattoo, a body tattoo, mm-hmm. that so your cell phone will ring under your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole new field of wearable wireless devices.
Yeah, there's a new device which is a bra device that you can tuck your cell phone in, I guess, right between your cleavage, doesn't sound like the happiest place to put a cell phone.
Well, actually, the latest story was about the tweeting bra that was in Greece, and it's making
it's a breast cancer awareness. Yeah, every time you
and it was just a stunt, and it's just for 2 weeks only, and a celebrity TV host there is wearing this, and mm-hmm. little tweets would go out, and it's ironic to warn women about breast
self-examination, which, by the way, just parenthetically, has actually not been shown. When subject to critical evaluation, breast self-evaluation has not been shown. It's kind of counterintuitive. You think this would help women lower their risk of death from breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
but it turns out that breast self-examination, like many things that we take for granted in medicine, the various types of screening processes, doesn't really make a difference in terms of whether you're going to live or die from breast cancer. You might discover a cancer, and that's good. But
that's very interesting.
Yeah. So
although I'd be an advocate for breast self exams over mammograms.
Right. It's doubly insidious because, mammograms, of course, being a source of radiation, mm-hmm. breast self exams being pretty organic, but both the message and the means of delivering the message don't seem to be that satisfactory here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the Google Glass, the eyewear that the Google has been beta testing, that is a really great concern because it's
going to go right into the brain because it's literally located right at your temple, right in front of your
eyes. Eyes are the second most sensitive part of the body.
No, there's no shielding. There's not even any skull material there to shield out the radiation.
Yeah, so they're asking for trouble, and I actually just got a report analyzing somebody that's been analyzing the radiation from it, and I just skimmed it today. I haven't read it thoroughly, but there was a picture in it of an egg that was able to be fried with the radiation coming off of the Google Glass.
Right.
So there is radiation. People probably trust, just like they trusted with cell phones. They must be safe because they're on the market. And look at how widely they're advertised, and everybody's got one. So we've made these assumptions of safety, but in fact, there's been no pre-market health testing required of them, and there's been no post-market surveillance of the health effects. So it's been a failure of government. And the FCC says that they rely on the FDA, but the FDA doesn't evaluate this.
I think it's just an example of something that, like many things, Nutrasweet, for example, it was tested and there was evidence of harm. It's a big industry. They've said, people aren't keeling over, obviously, from it, although many reports of adverse effects. And then it becomes an industry that has a self-sustaining momentum, and people would be having to die in droves in very apparent ways for us to begin to question this, because these are all hazards that have been grandfathered into our society, and mysterious illnesses are developing, people are having health problems, but it's unclear from whence they come, and there's so many different environmental challenges that it's hard to pick one from the other.
That's right. It is hard because there's so many different ways that it can affect the body. It might give one and the next person the brain tumor, or headaches or fatigue, and it's hard to pinpoint it. And like you said, there's so many other environmental issues. It must be very discouraging as a physician in your case and others to see the way that we're as a society just impairing our health, so your role becomes one of prevention as opposed to really helping people to optimize health. You got to warn people about this hazard and that hazard, and mm-hmm. very discouraging really to see.
Well, another way to look at it is that
GMO
foods. I have a long-term employment plan, that's for sure, because there are so many things that we need to tell people about. So let's focus in on, what your specialty is you actually are looking in particular at the effects of cell phones and other sources of electromagnetic fields. Let's not forget that there are other environmental sources. As Larry Gust pointed out, homes are full of various types of electromagnetic fields. What these effects might be on children, on unborn fetuses, because that's a big concern. Could we be creating problems for the not yet born? Or could we be impairing fertility? These are all issues around birth and childhood.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there is a growing body of research that's showing the impact on children, on fetuses, and fertility. Fertility, the science is very, very clear. The exposure to a cell phone dramatically reduces sperm count and motility, and it's they're saying now at a sperm bank, used to be 1 in 100 men who were donors would be, I mean, sorry, 10, it used to be, what was it? Wait, let me make sure I get the number right. 10 out of 100, and now it's 1 out of 100. So it's, then they're saying this is like the A-team, young guys wanting to, college kids or something, wanting to make a little money. So it's a great concern. But there is research, including from the Cleveland Clinic. We did a summary of the science on this. It's in a letter to parents on fertility that you can find by at electromagnetichealth.org. Alistair Phillips in Power Watch in the UK has also done a summary, and he wrote an article for Holistic Primary Care magazine summarizing the science on male fertility. There's not a lot on female fertility, but
it's a little less obvious to evaluate, because it's much easier to obtain a sperm sample and look at the quality of sperm. And it is a well-known phenomenon that the quality of sperm, the number of sperm and their activity, their so-called motility, their ability to move, mm-hmm. Has changed over the decades. It's actually less and less and less. And that may be due to a host of effects. It may be due to environmental toxins that are present in the air, water, or in our food, or environment, or EMFs. It's unclear.
Mm-hmm. There was a study very recently by Ole Johansson and a colleague. Ole is with the Karolinska Institute, and it showed the effects on fertility from different in an animal species, but on from different types of phone, from a cell phone, from a portable phone, from a Wi-Fi, a Bluetooth, and there's an interesting graph that shows you that at the minimum it was showing a 10% reduction in fertility. And that was for the Bluetooth.
And this isn't necessarily, carrying it in your hip pocket or in close proximity to where the sperm originates from.
Right, exactly. So we're exposed, the radiation dissipates internally. So wherever it's entered your body, you're going to have the biggest issue in terms of the power, which is one form of risk from these phones, but there's also the risk from the frequencies and that vibration of energy that will travel through your body. So, and then of course with phones, you've also got the issue of the magnetic fields, which come from the battery that most people don't even consider. And those are very important. In fact, there's research from a man named Bi Kun Lee at Kaiser Permanente in California that has shown that exposure to magnetic fields in utero, like one would experience from a mother using a cell phone when pregnant, if the phone was near the abdomen,
or potentially reading an article on baby care with an iPad perched on her abdomen while going to sleep, which is probably not an uncommon scenario. It's like they're staying up late reading articles about mothering.
Big mistake. So what this research has shown in three different studies, one showed the increased incidence of miscarriage. Then he showed the increased incidence with magnetic fields with asthma. And the more recent study, it's just shocking, actually, is he shows the increased incidence of obesity at age 13 when the child was exposed in utero to the magnetic fields. Statistically significant increase and increases with the duration of exposure to the magnetic fields. So magnetic fields are just as important. And like you said, when you're putting something up against your body, you're sitting in bed, on the computer, you got your laptop or your iPad, there are those fields, and then there's also the microwaves from the radio frequency radiation that's transmitting. Then of course
what you're just saying is that as you go to sleep, you turn off all your devices and lights out, but you basically have your modem on, and you've got your Wi-Fi. And that's transmitting waves throughout your house. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to go into all the rooms of your house and still obtain signal.
That's right. People should turn if they use a wireless router at all, they must turn it off at night. And a very easy way to do that is where you then never have to think about it again is to go to the hardware store and get a plant timer that will turn off your router and turn it on at certain periods of time and off at others. It makes it very, very simple. So overnight, we should not be exposed to these fields. And people who are really sensitive or tired or have health problems, I recommend that they actually turn off the fuse box to their room. And you just wouldn't believe what a profound difference it can make. Now, that's taking away the electric field,
right?
Which is a whole other subject that's extremely important as well, especially in the houses that haven't been properly wired.
Because the very wiring of your house that transmits electricity, a little basic physics, there are electromagnetic fields around the magnetic currents that transmit electricity to, say, your electric clock or to your, even when the lights are off, it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm. And all new houses should be built with the electrical wiring in a cable, so you could just eliminate that issue just like that if we only started building, housing properly.
In other words, insulating the current
That's
delivery.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about fertility. Let's talk about kids. I mean, it's more and more prevalent. You go to restaurants, and it actually seems like kind of a good thing because, little kids, and here I live in Manhattan, so I see this a lot. Kids really are very, very nicely calmed down and sedated when you put an iPad in their hands or a tablet. And they let the adults speak, and then they get to watch a little cartoon video or play a little game. They're amazingly adept at it, and it seems like they spend a lot of time with their face pressed up against the screen, totally absorbed by whatever game or whatever video they're watching. So is there a problem?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there was a study that showed that I think Scotland was the worst country. 40% of their mothers used the cell phone and tablets and things like that as a pacifier.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of issues with what you just described, well beyond the radio frequency issues, which we're talking about today. But what you're doing is you're training a young person to always be stimulated, to always look for the next stimulus, and that's at the expense of their not interacting with people like we did as children, and learning to develop, form relationships and to get along with people and to cooperate with people. These are the skills that they're going to need for the rest of their life. And instead, they're just being, you know, being put on the computer and being stimulated. And
they're
watching things, experience
vicariously. But also there's attentional issues related to that because, I look at modern movies, the pace of movies, the pace of TV. I also look at the phenomenon of Twitter, which is a 140 character art form.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that we're actually altering people's consciousness towards a form of societal attention deficit disorder via this type of media. It's hard to imagine. I mean, these kids, obviously, they'll be smart, but they'll be smart or different in profound ways from previous generations.
That's right. And in fact, just to backtrack a second to speaking about attention deficit disorder, when we were talking about fetal exposures, I didn't mention the research by Dr. Hugh Taylor at Yale that was with rats, but it showed that fetal exposure to cell phone radiation resulted in ADD type of behavior in the rats. And so yes, that's happening we are becoming more ADD, but the good news is I was just interviewing Dr. Joe Luizzo. I don't know if you know each other, but at the Nalanda Institute in New York for Contemplative Sciences.
Oh, okay.
And
he's
a Buddhist scholar and psychiatrist, trained at Columbia, and he's now at the Weill Cornell Center for Integrative Medicine. And he has a very large and growing following, teaching people ancient contemplative practices. And so he was saying that the parts of the brain that are being eroded by these multitasking, you know, and short-term attention spans and through the use of computer technologies today, that is actually the specific part of the brain that is strengthened through meditation. And so both mindfulness and meditation are key antidotes to what is happening to children today. Mindfulness meaning just bringing people present, you know, not having them always go seeking, looking for the next thing, what next stimulus, you know, and just bringing them fully present, and then meditation to, you know, work with the nervous system. And it's now needed more than ever. I mean, 20 years ago, no one knew what meditation was in Manhattan, you know, and now you see yoga centers every two blocks, and everybody's needing, and it's been a huge growth industry. Well, I think part of the reason may be because everybody's been so stressed out by all this wireless technology, which is creating stress proteins in our body. We know, as Dr. Martin Blank may have mentioned.
Yes. Reiterate that point. I think that's an important point to make.
Yeah, so we can see in the way that cells respond to this type of radiation is that they create stress proteins, the same thing that would happen if you were exposed to any other kind of stress. So your body...
In medicine, they refer to these as heat shock proteins.
Heat shock proteins. And so your body is responding, whether or not you feel you have symptoms or not, your body is responding. He knows it. The people who... have looked at people looking at under the microscope at blood changes whether or not you feel symptoms or not. In fact, my co-author Magda Havas up in Canada, she's been experimenting with lie detector equipment, and all across many different types of views of this physiologically what's happening to people, even if the people say they don't experience symptoms, their body is responding. So, you know, it's just a matter of time before their physiology is, you know, eroded more and more. And the same thing happens whether it's the radio frequency and micro fields or it's the low frequency fields like electric fields and magnetic fields. They might happen, you know, one might happen faster or slower or, you know, more efficiently or less efficiently, but it's happening all the same with all these forms of electromagnetic fields. And so they're not normal. They're not they're man-made. It's not the same as the subtle energies of the Earth or the Sun. And in fact, I feel the Earth and the Sun are, you know, really important in healing from this stress that we're putting on our body. I wonder sometimes why there's so many people have low vitamin D. you know, and whether that could possibly have anything to do with the amount of EMF. Because if you, you know what I mean? Does that make any sense to you?
That there may be an interference in synthesis of vitamin D because of this?
Well, we know that the vitamin D is healing and it has so many positive effects,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's really clear. And we know that EMF, these man-made frequencies that are not full spectrum and they're artificial, pulses and so forth, that these things are creating the conditions that we know the vitamin D is healing.
Well, I mean, certainly you could say that for some kids, there's sort of a one-for-one substitution of sunlight with dim screen light, which not only deprives them of vitamin D, but also may subject them to harmful radiation. So, you know, there I'm with you. There's an interesting term that you quote in one of your seminars, one of the seminars that you gave in Boulder, Colorado, which is digital dementia. The quote is, children are beginning to show signs of dementia, a global phenomenon now being called digital dementia. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, actually. There's a book by the name of Digital Dementia that came out of Germany that I haven't read. But recently the South Koreans have been in the news talking about the extreme problem that they're having.
They're a really wired country. They're far more wired even than we are.
Mm-hmm. And so they there are centers now all around the world, and the first one just opened. Well, there's one that just hospital-based program that just opened in the U.S. Not specifically for dementia, but for digital detox. So there are two issues. There's a severe dementia where children's brains are not developing properly, and they have behavior and functionality as if they were an older person with dementia. Now that's an extreme case, but there are a lot of people that are just really not functional and not productive and not able to cope in their life. And so there in the U.S. there's a camp that's open in California for adults to go where you have to turn in your cell phone and tablets and all of that, and you play capture the
go
flag,
cold turkey.
And you play archery, and you're encouraged to sneak out at night and just learn to play, learn to reconnect with other people. That's uh-huh. what they're trying to teach people. And there's a camp in Pennsylvania that's doing that for children also, really pushing people to learn to get to know each other again, because they're not developing these social skills, social and emotional skills. And then there's the hospital-based program, I think it's Bradford, Pennsylvania, way west near Pittsburgh area, that has a, an inpatient 10-day detox program that just opened. So, and there are hundreds of these camps, these detox places in China. I think it was 7 years ago I read in the LA Times there were hundreds then in China to help people, to especially children, to wean themselves off of this addiction.
Well, maybe they can put some of the Chinese hackers into those camps so that they no longer hack into the private bank accounts of Americans or hack into the Pentagon or the Defense Department. One of the big initiatives in this country is, you know, pouring more money into education, because we're concerned that we're falling behind, that we're no longer keeping up with the rest of the world in terms of our education. And there's an initiative called the Wired Classroom, which is getting a lot of buzz these days, the idea being that we want to make sure that each kid gets a computer, that they get computerized devices in every classroom, that they can stay abreast with, you know, the electronic revolution that's happening in internationality. Do you see any downsides in that?
Yeah, there are a lot of people that think this is an enormous mistake, because in especially with younger children, what you really need to be educating them about is human relationships. You know, people used to learn by looking at an adult's eyes, you know, and behavior and body language, and that is just they're missing developmental stages when they're in terms of interrelationships. So there are people that believe that this is really not a good thing, and to just be overstimulating kids. I mean, it's great. There's like Rafi, the child champion. Rafi, you know who he is. He with the television show, he just wrote a book called Light Web, Dark Web, mm-hmm. and he said we need to learn how to optimize the light web. and minimize the dark web, because there are they're good things. You can learn about anywhere in the world today so easily, mm-hmm. but we need to be balancing our lives and balancing our nervous systems and not just be sucked in and drawn in to the point where a child can't pull themselves away from the internet.
Right.
You know.
Well, what about the actual physical consequences? Because it is thought that with the installation of these massive industrial strength routers in classrooms, you know, clearly there's a lot of power involved. There's a whole new, literally a wiring initiative that's going on in modern schools. They're having to either retrofit or build anew schools with more fiber optic cables and more powerful routers and transmitters. And it is said that kids who sit next to these routers, powerful transmitters, experience physical symptoms. What about that?
Yes, they do. And I have measured in schools. I've measured a lot of the classrooms and also the smart boards that they use in schools. And so if a child is in the first row, they're going to be, pretty significantly exposed to those as well. So what I did learn recently, which was very exciting to learn, is that there are two brands of tablets, not the iPad, but there are two others. One is Fujitsu, and one is, it'll come to me in a second, but they do make tablets now where you can plug in an Ethernet cord. So the iPad, for example, is what so many children are being given, that it's only Wi-Fi enabled. You're not allowed, you can't plug in an Ethernet cord if you wanted to use them safely. But apparently there are these two, and maybe there are more, that where people can use these kinds of things much more safely. That's how I use a laptop. If I'm traveling, I stay in a hotel where there's an Ethernet cord. If it was a real emergency and I had to turn on the Wi-Fi, well, I'll do that. But I always seek to do things the most safely. So there's no reason why schools can't be designing their classrooms so that they're safe by hardwiring. No reason. It's only their embarrassment over the fact that they made an enormous mistake. They might have raised funds from the parents to put in the wireless network, and now they have to admit that doesn't make any sense. So we have a site. I have a site that's called Campaign for Radiation Free Schools on Facebook that keeps people up to date on this whole subject. And
right. There's the call to action: Campaign for Radiation Free Schools.
That's right. That's right. And anything to do with children, schools, teachers, is posted there, and we have a large group and growing, and it's a great resource. There are several others. There's one in the UK that's got a lot of good content, and they will sometimes post on Campaign for Radiation Free Schools. There's a group in England called MobileWise, and they did a review of all the science about 2 years ago that affects children, and that report is excellent, summarizes all of the science for people that are really wondering. Let's see, what else? And then the Yale University, Hugh Taylor, who is the chairman of the obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive sciences area there, he that did that study that I mentioned before, he was also co-author in a report that they put out that's called Cell Phones, Technology Exposures, and Health Effects. And that's an excellent report as well.
And of course, there's the website electromagnetichealth.org, which is a resource for people interested in the subject.
Right. And we had a conference in June with Dr. Taylor from Yale, Dr. Blank from Columbia, Deborah Davis from Environmental Health Trust.
So Dr. Davis will be an upcoming guest on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. So clearly they're very responsible voices in the scientific community speaking out on this.
Well, it's great to see the people, especially the ones coming out of the Ivy League, starting to take a stand, and that's one of the reasons why we had the conference in June, was to bring them together and have them take a stand together. And there's a summary of that that's posted on Electromagnetic Health. There's audio that people can listen to, and we also have a number of videos from that that are available on Vimeo. And we also post them on Campaign for Radiation-Free Schools.
So great stuff, great resources. And let's mention it once again before we end this podcast, the upcoming conference in New York on November 15th.
Yes, it's at the Open Center. It's called How to Protect Ourselves and Growing Children from Electromagnetic Fields. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. at the New York Open Center, and people need to register, get a ticket, and they can go to opencenter.org and get their ticket there. And I recommend people book a reservation soon, because there is a space, the capacity issue, and we expect a good turnout.
Right, and that's located on 30th Street in Midtown Manhattan. And the guests will include you, Camilla Reese, Dr. Stephen Sinatra, previous guests on Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Dr. Martin Blank, and Lawrence Gust. I think that's going to be a great event. I'm going to try and make it November 15th at 7 p.m. here in New York.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. And obviously, we just scratched the surface of this fascinating subject, but there's so much to be thinking about. But at least you've raised our awareness about something which I think is going to loom as one of our critical health challenges in the 21st century.
That's right. It is, and people will want to read the latest report from Harvard professor Martha Herbert, summarizing the evidence that autism, biological effects that are known to be happening in autism are the same ones that are known to be happening from EMF. It's a very important new paper by Martha Herbert and Siddhi Sage. We know it's damaging DNA, and if it's causing this problem of autism that, as you know, is affecting, 1 in 50 children today, up from 1 in 150 in 2002, we're really in trouble, and we better, sit up and pay attention. So thank you very, very much for all of your interest in the topic and having several of us on your show.
Well, thank you, Camilla Reese. And once again, electromagnetichealth.org is the place to go for additional information. Thanks for spending time with us. We're going to stay on top of this issue because it's an important one. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.